Next Chapter Podcasts.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, this is Sally Kate Holmes, Managing Director of Next Chapter Podcasts, here to tell you about a pretty cool new offering from our friends at Apollo Podcasts. You can now find the Play On Podcasts on Apollo Plus, a creator-owned platform where every subscriber helps audio fiction creators such as us. You can listen ad-free, early access to exclusives, behind-the-scenes supercuts, and more on Apollo Plus. On top of all that, 70% of the revenue on Apollo Plus goes directly to creators. Join Apollo Plus through the Apollo Podcasts app or by going to apollopods.com.
Hi, my name is Michael Goodfriend, and I'm the executive producer of the Play On Podcasts. Josh Wilder is an acclaimed playwright who's known for captivating storytelling and innovative approaches to theater. He was born and raised in Philly, discovered his passion for writing at an early age, and pursued it with unwavering determination. He graduated from Carnegie Mellon with a degree in acting and then went on to earn his MFA in playwriting from the Yale School of Drama. And he's gotten tons of critical acclaim, many, many awards. And he's also shown his talent for adaptation through his collaboration with the Play on Shakespeare Initiative and the Play on Podcasts. He was entrusted with the task of translating William Shakespeare's Love's Labour's Lost for a modern audience and bridged that gap between the timeless themes of the original text and the contemporary sensibilities of today. And we are all enjoying it now, listening to the Play On Podcast series, Love's Labour's Lost. This is part two of my interview with Josh Wilder. You mentioned class, and you've referred in other conversations that we've had when we were in pre-production, you've referred to the diaspora, mm-hmm. and that you wanted class and the diaspora to be imbued in this production. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's classism in America, right? There's just classism in every culture, every society. There is a class, especially if this class lives within a capitalist society, right? I think the comedy of Love's Labour's Lost is the fact that Shakespeare has put in all these different types of classes of people together. You know what I mean? Or, you know, we have like our clowns, we have our kings, we have our queens, we have our servants. So there's already naturally a tier of characters that we can kind of juxtapose with each other to create comedy. So for me, thinking about the university setting and thinking about the class of people that goes there, usually the blue collar class are the ones that are working for the universities. They're the groundskeepers, they're the janitors, they're, you know, they're the common folk, as Custard would say. He's my favorite character, by the way, Custard.
Custard is, why is he your favorite?
Because at the end of the play, you know, when he finds out that the boys and the king, you know, are also like breaking their own rules, he still gets the girl at the end. And it's just like, you know, we're going to make, you know, like get, you know, sorry, all these common folk. He kind of just like flips the whole thing
And he's classic blue collar working class, right?
Yeah. And also, like, it's this really awesome poetic justice for the working class. You know what I mean? Yeah. Is that the people who are, you know, the people who are on this level remain who they are, and they are why they are. And I think that's something that just makes me smile about Costard. You know what I mean? He gets jailed and starved and, you know, sends messages and still, like, he wins in the end. So that's why I really like Costard a lot. But when it comes to the classism, right? I mean, when we think about the class structure within the university, you know what I mean? Like, these are folks from all walks of life. And what's really interesting about that is that, yes, if you could afford to go to university, yes, if you can afford to be part of these social clubs, yes, if you can afford to be part of this high class society, why not? I mean, we're talking about Reconstruction, right? Like, there was a creation of the Black bourgeoisie. And to see those kind of clashes of culture within university, it just makes complete sense.
So you say you like Costard. Who don't you like?
Oh, I can't stand Barone.
Who?
I can't stand Barone. He talks so damn much. He talks too damn much. Everyone loves Barone. Like, I get it. Like, who doesn't love that Act Four speech? You know what I mean? Like, I definitely understand. Like, he is just a lover. But he is just so annoying to me. Maybe because, like, you know, he's always the fly guy. He's the smartest. He's the brightest. He's the most poetic. He's the whatever. But he's also too smart for his own good. So to see him not accomplish the thing that he set out to do the second he sees, you know, the girls is really interesting. He doesn't want to sign this thing. He doesn't. But then he also, like, tricks himself. At the same time, he tricks himself. He, like, tricks himself into love when he could have just been honest about love from the very, very beginning.
And Rosalind puts him on the spot. Basically, at the end, she's like, you're all talk. You're right. All talk. Prove it to me. Go away. Shut up. Don't talk for an entire year. Just go and do service. Right. You know, like what the princess tells the King of Navarre.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You all have been just nothing but talk. Your vows are nothing but talk. Go and prove yourselves.
And do they?
Well, we'll never know.
We'll never know.
Because it's a lost play, right? I mean, Love's Labor is lost. Is it the first of a sequel and that we don't have the second part? Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think it's either the prequel or the sequel to All's Well.
Right. There's speculation that All's Well That Ends Well is the second half of Love's Labor's Lost.
Yeah. Yes. And what's really interesting about Love's Labor's Lost, right, is that it, even when you read the original text, it reads like a messy new play. It is not clean at all. And that was really most of the translation work, was to clean up this, like, new play. Because if you look at Shakespeare's comedies, there's the, you know, switching up identities. There's the play within the play. There's the boys versus, like, all of Shakespeare's greatest hits are, like, inside this play. So it kind of is very, what's the word? I don't want to say convoluted. It's just very concentrated.
A hodgepodge, maybe.
Yeah, it's like a big, you know, it's like a goulash of everything that he wanted to do with all his comedies. So it makes sense that they're all kind of linked in some type of a way, because he definitely does tease out parts of Love's Labor into their own plays. Like, Taming of the Shrew is definitely like a Barone Rosalind situation. Just the back and forth, just everything. So yeah, this was a messy new play that you kind of had to clean up to make it make sense.
Was there anything, can you think of a passage or a speech or a thing that was particularly challenging that took way more work than anything else. So that, that you had to go over and over and over to get the translation to make sense.
The King's speech at the very top of the play, when the Princess of France comes over with her crew and essentially tells the king that she owes, that that Navarre owes, you know, Aquitaine money. And the fact that the king's like, no, y'all owe us money. So the back and forth between money was very hard to understand. That speech is so all over the place. It took me and Davina, I think, like 3 days to clean that speech up. We were in Minnesota, I think, doing that.
How were you able to do it? I mean, what did you settle on?
I think we settled on just how can we make it very, very, very clear that France owes Navarre money. That was the main, how do we make it very clear?
And in Shakespeare, I want to do a side-by-side. We do this sometimes in these interviews, and it's so revealing and helpful. I'm going to read the King's speech as it was originally written in Shakespearean language, right? And then we'll hear the great Russell G. Jones, who plays the King of Navarre, do his read of the same speech. And I just want to, so we can get a sense of, you know, the challenge that you were faced with. So here's my read of the speech.
Madam, your father here doth intimate the payment of 100,000 crowns being but the one half of an entire sum dispersed by my father in his wars. But say that he or we, as neither have, received that sum, yet there remains unpaid 100,000 more, in surety of the which one part of Aquitaine is bound to us, although not valued to the money's worth. If then the king your father will restore but that one half which is unsatisfied, we will give up our right in Aquitaine, and hold fair friendship with his majesty. But that, it seems, he little purposeth, for here he doth demand to have repaid 100,000 crowns, and not demands on payment of 100,000 crowns to have his title live in Aquitaine, which we much rather had to part withal, and have the money by our father lent, than Aquitaine, so gelded as it is. Dear princess, were not his request so far from reason's yielding, your fair self should make a yielding against some reason in my breast, and go well satisfied to France again.
All right. Really, really crystal clear, right? No, not at all. Okay. So here is Russell G. Jones as the King of Navarre doing his read.
Madam, your father in this letter claims that he repaid my 100,000 crowns, which is only one half of the entire sum loaned by my father to fund your father's war. To say that we have ever received that sum from France is not at all true, and still you owe 100,000 more. Until he pays, his crownless Aquitaine belongs to me, although he knows it's not worth half the sum. If your frail father would simply pay half the debt which still remains unsatisfied, we will give up our right in Aquitaine and hold fair friendship with his majesty. My grace in this event has been ignored, for here he does outrageously demand 100,000 crowns and offers not to pay me my 100,000 more, so he can have his Aquitaine returned. In short, we truly would much rather have the money that my royal father lent than worthless Aquitaine, that crippled land. Dear princess, were not his request so far from human reason, your fair self might dull sharp reason's blade that lies within my breast and lead you back to France well satisfied.
What's amazing to me about this speech is that you have to get it. You have to understand it to understand the play.
Yeah. This is the inciting incident. You know, this, right. This is it.
So most modern audiences, I would imagine, listening to the version that I read, are going to be like, what the what? And you could do cartwheels and try to make it as clean. I mean, I'm sure there's ways to make it very clear on stage with the original language, but we don't have the visual in the podcast. So it's got to be clear. We've got to know that this is, if we get that it's about money, it's about transaction, it's about you owe me this and you say you've already paid it, but you haven't. Look, now we've got something to go on.
Mm-hmm. And when I tell you the first 20 seconds of the original makes my head hurt every time, it truly, truly, truly does. that's why it took so long.
Uh-huh. Did you get help from actors in parsing it out? Or was it really just between you and...
It's me and the dramaturg. It's me, the dramaturg, the actor. It's me, the dramaturg, the actor, and the director. It's me, the dramaturg, the actor, the director, and the audience. I mean, we workshop this play about like 7 times in different parts of the world. So we all can be on the same page. So it took a lot of workshopping.
Join Play On Premium to get merch like t-shirts, hoodies, and coffee mugs, ad-free episodes, and bonus content video featuring interviews with the actors, producers, playwrights, and directors who brought it all to life. Go to ncpodcasts.com and subscribe to Play On Premium to support the art and the artists.
I'm curious, you mentioned you yourself, the actor, you yourself, the dramaturg. You were an actor. You started out as an actor.
Yeah.
You got into Carnegie Mellon, which is like, you know, one of the best programs out there as an actor. Where did the shift into writing happen for you?
It happened there. It happened in acting school. One of the great takeaways that I got from undergrad was you have to save yourself as an artist. You have to create your own work. You never know when your time is going to come, when that lightning's going to strike. So in the meantime, you explore your creativity by doing other things. You try to write, you try to direct, you try to produce, you try to still be a maker of art. You still try to figure out how to get the money to make the art. You know what I mean? So for me, that school truly taught me how to be an entrepreneur as an artist, how to be a producer as an artist. And I think also me, you know, being 22 years old, but looking like I'm still 14, you know, that has a lot to play in it. You know, they always told us that our training will catch up to us in our 30s. Because, you know, CMU is truly like MFA acting training, but for undergrad. So there definitely is a catch up to like life will catch you up to your training in a way. So for me, graduating with a BFA in acting, not booking any gigs, you know, I didn't want to starve. I didn't want to, you know, be in this hamster wheel of trying to knock on doors. So I really, you know, started applying for artist grants. I started applying for fellowships. I started going on Google and just typing in the things that I want. And I got a fellowship from the Pittsburgh Foundation for Advancing Black Artists. And I said, oh, great. Let me just be like a theater artist and really figure out what I want to do. At the time, I was writing solo performances. That's how I kind of started really getting into my playwriting chair. And then when I was in Pittsburgh, you know, figuring out what to do, all these play ideas started happening. So then I said, oh, let me just write plays. Let me just write plays and see what happens. And I'll still audition on the side. And my play, it was a hit. It struck lightning. And that's kind of where my career took off from there.
Which play was that?
This play was called Leftovers. Received a fellowship at the Playwright Center, the Jerome Many Voices Fellowship for Playwrights of Color. Once again, affirmative action grant or an affirmative action thing. It was designed specifically for playwrights of color to work on their plays at the Playwright Center in Minnesota. And they opened it up to a national pool. And I was the first recipient of that award. Leftovers is about these two brothers in Philly and a giant dandelion grows through the sidewalk. And they climb this dandelion because they want to know what's up there, number one. And also, number two, they want to escape the reality and be a part of the Cosby Show happiness fervor that that show has had on us for the culture in America for a very long time. And then when they climb the beanstalk and they discover that Cliff Huxtable is actually a character and not the real father, then they come to the realization that they need to learn how to not compare and contrast the TV dad to the real dad and accept their father for who he is.
That sounds like an incredible and beautiful play.
It launched 1,000 ships, but most of my plays have been political in some type of a way. You know, Salt, Pepper, Ketchup is about gentrification. Leftovers is about Cosby Show happiness. Wrong River is about the Flint water crisis and how a family deals with it when it first hits them. The Highwaymen is about, highway being torn down through the Rondo, through the Rondo community and the reverberations of that. Marty and the Hands That Could is a play about a man coming back from jail and trying to figure out how to integrate back into his family as the door of recidivism is knocking behind constantly. All of my work has some type of political metaphor to it because I believe that all art is political. So for me, having Love's Labor's Lost, Set at Howard, the all black cast, that is my political act of art making. And I really, really hope that the audience enjoys it.
They most certainly do if they're anything like me and the people that I've spoken to have just been thrilled with it. I'm just curious to know, you've done all this work as a writer. Do you feel a calling back as an actor ever?
I feel like once an actor, always an actor. That was the thing that made me want to join the circus. So there's always, a window of opportunity to act. But I really, really, really like being where I am as a writer. I love writing for actors. I love being in rehearsal with actors. I love building a world with actors. I like to think I'm an actor's writer. So I don't know. I get as much joy watching an actor figure out the journey. I get a lot of joy out of that. That's where I feel the most empowered as an artist. But I haven't acted since I was like 24. So, there's always room to hop back in. I mean, I would love to hop back into a character's skin. I would love to be in the rehearsal room as an actor. I think that it'll be another learning experience for me. And probably, maybe I should return back to the stage to really develop more of an understanding of an actor's process. I mean, it'll only make me a better writer.
Well, I certainly hope that you'll continue to write and act and do all of the things you do as a storyteller because we are all better for it. Josh Wilder, it has been a real privilege. Thank you for sharing your time with us today.
Thank
And
you.
thank you for lending your incredible talents to Love's Labor's Lost and helping us see it in a new way. Or maybe helping us see it the way it was originally intended. You've been listening to the Play On Podcast bonus content series. You can learn more about the Play On Podcast at Next Chapter Podcast's website, ncpodcasts.com. That's N as in next, C as in chapter, podcasts with an S at the end.com, where you can find other Play On Podcast series and interviews, along with talk podcasts like The 500, The 10, Beef with Bridget Todd, and a whole lot more. I'd like to thank Jeremiah Tittle, the founder of Next Chapter Podcasts, and my producer, Pete Musto. Our audio engineer and editor is Justin Cortese. Be sure to subscribe to Next Chapter Podcast for updates on all the latest content, and don't forget to rate and review our shows. It really makes a difference. I'm Michael Goodfriend, and I look forward to sharing more incredible works in the Play On Podcast series with you, along with lots of enlightening bonus content at Next Chapter Podcast.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Next Chapter Podcasts.